Thank you for joining us today for Articulations, an interview series with local artists. This program is a collaboration between the Margaret Sloss Center for Women and Gender Equity, the College of Design, and KHOI Community Radio. My name is Nancy Gephardt, and we are thrilled to introduce you to four amazing artists in our community, from whom you'll hear every Monday at 4 p.m. during the month of March. This interview series is made possible by the generous support provided by Humanities Iowa and originated with the hashtag Women Know Stuff Too exhibition and programming created in 2020 by Ruxandra Marcoux, Emily Morgan, and Jennifer Drinkwater. Women Know Stuff Too programming seeks to highlight women and gender minoritized non-binary artists' contributions in the arts. Focus on women and non-binary artists' expertise in art making has historically been lacking, with exhibitions typically focusing on what artists represent in their work more than how they do it, or the levels of skill and technical command they achieve in the process. We want to move beyond that by asking about the process, experience, meaning, and impact of the art discussed in these interviews. This is the third interview in this series, and I'm excited to be speaking with Sarah Merritt. Sarah works full-time developing educational programming for Ryman Gardens at Iowa State University. She is also an artist, professional belly dancer, and educator with over 20 years' experience teaching a range of programs from painting and problem solving to martial arts, transnational fusion dance, science communication, and more. She holds a BA in Art, Sexuality, and Aesthetic Perception from UMass Amherst, an MFA in Painting from the San Francisco Art Institute, and an Informal Learning and Museums Professional Certificate from Oregon State University. Sarah is consistently drawn to the connections between things and people, the intricacies of visual patterning, and the spectrum of perception, especially as an exploration through distortion. She believes absolutely and equally in the transformative powers of visual expression and informal education. Thank you so much for being here, Sarah.
Thank you, Nancy. I'm really excited to be part of this group. I admire all the artists that are being interviewed, and it's really kind of humbling and exciting to join them.
Well, you have so much to offer, and I'm so grateful for you giving your time and your expertise to us for this interview series. And one thing, we've known each other for a while, and one thing I've long admired about you and your work for so many reasons is how you inspire me as an educator. And you've included that in your bio too, because I know it's important to you. In a previous conversation, you said, everyone is a learner, everyone is a teacher. So I'm just curious if you can talk about what that statement means to you.
Yeah, so personally, it means that to me as an educator, I approach teaching from a learner's perspective. I recognize that there's no end to what I can learn, even and especially when I'm in the moment when I decide that I can teach something or that I want to teach something. When I teach dance or other forms of movement like mark making, I purposefully recognize the collective experiences of everybody that surrounds me, and there's no need for elevation in that space. We learn together and we help each other learn. It's extremely important for me to connect to people on that same level.
Yeah. So you always get to be a learner in those situations.
I always get to be a learner.
Which is amazing.
It's so cool. I get to take my own classes for free. It's really...
Which is so amazing, right? And to just to be curious, I think, is such a valuable just approach to life and to teaching and to education. So in your bio, too, you talk about the importance of informal education. Could you explain a little bit about what you mean by informal education?
Yeah. So when we talk about education, we typically think of systematic curriculum or teacher-directed learning that happens in a formal or a structured setting like a school. Informal education is more often self-directed, so it involves a balance of choice and control, and can happen anywhere. So it can happen at a museum, at a park, at a public garden, at a nature center, you know, in a house. And yeah, it can happen in a school as well. But there's no standardized testing. We're not measuring growth in the same way. And another way to frame it is sort of as free choice learning, mm-hmm. where folks seek out educational experiences that are based on personal interests and in specific sociocultural or physical contexts.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Which is amazing, right? To especially emphasize that learning happens everywhere.
Yes.
In all these different spaces, and yes. especially outside of school settings, and with maybe a little bit more freedom because of that separation from assessment, right? From yes. the, especially
There's
the standardized
no pressure.
Testing assessment.
That can be really anxiety driving for folks.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Yeah. So specifically as an educator, what do you think people gain, or what do you hope people gain from arts education experiences?
So I hope that people sort of reach out beyond their boundaries, right? They test their boundaries a little bit. I also hope that people, you know, there's a certain amount of already bravery that goes into just signing up for something, right? Getting in the door. But I hope that they extend that into maybe learning about themselves in a little bit of way, or about how they want to express themselves, and maybe even getting surprised by their own capabilities. I'm always amazed and rejuvenated and, you know, filled with, I don't know, joy when I see learning happen, because you can see it happen. Mm-hmm. You see that moment when somebody finally gets something and then they're like, oh, I didn't realize this was going to be so accessible to me.
Yeah.
Just because out of fear, out of the idea that they didn't try it before.
Yeah. Yeah. I love that description of it as like seeing that surprise, because you really can. That you see that surprise and you see that joy, especially in doing something that maybe you felt insecure about or didn't think that you had the skills to be able to do.
Yes.
Yeah. So just going off of what you're talking about, to be an artist is to be personally vulnerable, right? How do you overcome or embrace this vulnerability?
Wow. Yeah.
That's a big question.
It's a big question. I embrace it because I have to. I developed an artistic practice as a private journey through depression and anxiety fueled by severe struggles with body image. And I learned, you know, in a long process, I learned to value my own body by seeing it as art, by connecting it to the way that my hand moves when I draw, and seeing the way that my body moves when I dance. That movement is empowering for me and was really elucidating for me to see like what my body can do and that it is a vessel through which art happens,
yeah.
right? That relationship is really sacred, but also limited and unstable when I keep it to myself, which I did for, you know, over 25 years.
Yeah.
In 2019, I gave a TEDx talk sharing some of that story to encourage others to find their own beauty through artistic expression. It was scary, but vulnerability shows humanity, and that is the space in which we connect to each other.
Absolutely.
So teaching, particularly modes of expression, extends that relationship, makes the beauty bigger, and requires openness to connect to others. I approach teaching from that space and with a beginner's mindset every time.
Yeah.
Right. I hope to encourage others to let go of what they think they know by giving them trust and support to help them go through that process.
Absolutely. That's such a wonderful, wonderful approach, really recognizing, right, that you can't ask others, you can't ask the students, you can't ask the people that you're learning with to be vulnerable if you're also not willing to be vulnerable in that situation.
Right, right. Yeah. That already sets out an inequality. Yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah.
So you mentioned your TEDx talk, which is phenomenal. You did such a wonderful Aww. Job, and I'm sure that was incredibly stressful. But you also, in that TEDx talk, go into some more details, maybe just share a few, you share more personal stories about the things we're talking about today. So is there a way, could you give people just information about how they could access that TED talk in case they wanted to get more information?
Yeah, absolutely. You have to search for TEDx. It's a TEDx Iowa State University talk from 2019. And the title of it is, so search for Sarah Merritt, Finding Body Beauty Through Artistic Expression.
Perfect.
It's a long title. But
It is, but it's totally worth the search on YouTube. So do that. So as you're thinking about your own art practice, as you're thinking about your education practice. Are there specific artists or educators that you look to for inspiration?
Yeah, that one's kind of it's hard because we could talk about this for days. Yeah. But I've been really thinking about this, and I have to start with my parents. My father was a middle school teacher, and I was always moved by his patience, thoughtfulness, and an uncanny creative ability to turn anything into an exploratory opportunity for learning. So it was like, it didn't feel like learning. It felt yeah. like games. It felt like asking questions and exploring. And
and it is fun.
It right? is fun, especially yeah. when you're not just given the answer to mm-hmm. something, right? Like that is the least amount of fun when it comes to education.
Absolutely.
Don't just tell me the answer. Help me find the answer. That is something that he ingrained in me.
In a way that's meaningful to me, right?
Yes, yeah. yes. That connects to this thing that's happening right now or the stuff that's in front of me. Or yeah. And then my mother was not a teacher and actually only had achieved she had only gone through high school education. So she wasn't college educated. But she questioned everything. And that desire to know why and how things and people work inspires me to do the same thing.
Absolutely.
So I've also had some really incredible educators throughout elementary, middle, high school, college, grad school, adulthood. Like everybody around me is an educator, and I've learned a lot from you, and I've learned just from anybody. My grandfather, my papap, used to say that there's not a person you meet that you can't learn something from. Mm. And I've kind of tried to absorb that a little.
I love that.
As for artists, there's just way too many, but I've always gravitated towards the surrealist because my passion is in finding beauty through distortion.
Sure.
Because that's how I found my body, was through mm-hmm. being kind of a distorted body. And one of my favorite artists is Wangechi Mutu. Mm. She's a Kenyan artist who does these, you know, she's known for her collages, but she works with mixed media and touches on concepts of identity and gender and race through these manipulated forms that are just so kind of bizarre, but also magical.
Yeah. So, and things that you can keep going back to and finding new things. And every time you look
yes,
at them, right.
Yes, or I never feel like I've seen it.
Absolutely.
You know what I mean? I'm looking yeah. at it. I'm like, no, I'm just now seeing this.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah.
So much of what you do involves connection to other people, right. Through teaching, through arts. And so I want to take a minute just to talk about the COVID-19 pandemic as we're at this
yeah,
kind of
let's,
like 2
let's
year
throw
mark.
It out there.
I know, because I want to talk about how the pandemic has impacted the arts. So as an artist, how was your art practice affected by the pandemic?
Yeah, so I'm going to get extra vulnerable here. When the world shut down, I was already overwhelmed. And I know that a lot of people were probably in that space as well. I hilariously thought that I had gone beyond my capacity for stress, right? Like mm-hmm. I was like, my husband and I both were like, we can't take on anything more. It's not possible.
Sure.
and
then
that's when the world's like, here you go. Here's some more stuff. So in that muckiness, the activities that I used to turn to for stress relief, and joy began to feel like work. I was doing everything at home. And so I did, you know, I did blur the lines between work and home, and it just all felt like work.
Sure.
And it never felt like home. I had classes that were canceled. Dance, you know, I'm part of a kind of a global dance community, and that shifted all online. And even though I'm an introvert, I really depend on that shared physical space when mm-hmm. I'm doing physical work
yeah.
In order to connect and in order to feel fulfilled by that. So that did not work for me.
Yeah.
I have still not successfully navigated that transition. Also, I had recently completed a solo show at the Octagon. And it was sort of a 20-year collection of work. And so I was at a natural stopping point and also wasn't starting anything new. So I kind of fell into a limbo in terms of that practice.
Sure.
Therapy was the most helpful thing.
Yeah.
Right. And I think a lot of people really explored that during COVID-19 or during 2020 when there was so much going on.
Absolutely.
But that helped me check in with my own values and ask myself, why is it that I do this? You know, I thought I knew that, but I don't revisit those, you know, very often. And I was like, it's time to revisit. Why do I do this thing? What values are served from me teaching or from me doing this activity? And those questions led to some surprising answers, like how I get more out of teaching than I get out of doing sometimes. Mm. And I'm more inspired by students than I am teachers.
Yeah.
In different situations. And that I don't care if my artwork is displayed in public anymore. Like,
yeah.
It was never a driving force for me to get an art education. And it's just not a value that I hold. So that's why everything kind of like just stopped. And in 2021, a friend of mine reached out to me asking for some custom work that was a little bit out of my comfort zone. And I was like, yes, I don't know what I'm doing, but I would like to do it.
Sure.
Because of that, you know, that, yeah, that drive for experimentation,
push, right?
And mm-hmm. to have that growth mindset, it was like, yeah, okay, at least I can, I will learn from this, even if it does not succeed. and that, you know, I encourage people to do that when they're stuck, because when you continue to do these things that are automatic to you, like dance was automatic to me, drawing mm-hmm. was automatic, painting was automatic. Sometimes you can stop thinking about it and you can start thinking about other things, right? Like you get into that, like, I drove myself home from work and I don't remember how
yeah,
I did that.
It's almost like a trance or meditative kind of place.
Yes.
Yeah.
And then you're like, wait, but I could have killed someone.
But also like, that's what? Dangerous.
That's maybe a little dangerous.
Yeah.
So instead I took this approach that like, if I am all consumed by something new, I don't have headspace to think about something else.
Yeah.
I have to be in this moment and do this thing. And that was really powerful. I needed my whole brain for it. And that helped me reset. I became a beginner again.
Absolutely.
So, yeah.
So is that kind of what led you to find joy in your art making again?
Yeah. Yeah. So that struggle, that productive struggle, that really builds learning mm-hmm. and really keeps it in, mm-hmm. you know, like really kind of locks it in.
Yeah.
That was really helpful for me. And, also becoming a teacher again. So yeah. I was like, okay, I had a class that started, you know, I started talking to the folks at Reliable Street who were, you know, the folks out there are such great community builders, and they do such a nice job of really trying to reach out and engage with audiences all over. So they had started, they're like, we want to do a new event series. And someone on their team had taken a belly dance class for me in
sure.
the past
yeah.
and reached out to me and was like, hey, will you teach a class out here? And I was like, yes, I will. I absolutely will.
Yeah.
And we, you know, we did masking and we made sure people were vaccinated, and we're like, I'm a little nervous, but we did it. And it was such a worthwhile experience. It was, and I had some of the most amazing students that I've ever had. And actually some of them have joined the dance troupe that I'm in as well. So
that's so it's wonderful.
Just, yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Especially to have such a powerful, meaningful kind of re-entry into joining together in creative space, physically present, right?
Yes.
It is different.
Yes.
And I am grateful for all of the virtual spaces that were created over the last 2 years. But when you have that opportunity again to create in the same physical space as other people,
Yeah, and when you have that hiatus, that
yes.
first time feels so much bigger.
Absolutely.
Than it had.
Yeah. So you teach this class at Reliable Street that you taught, and then I know you've also taught other beginning belly dancing classes in Ames. How do you invite people into belly dancing who may be nervous to try it?
Ooh, yeah. Excuse me. So it's sort of the same way that I invite people to be open to learning a new artistic skill.
Yeah.
You know, people will often sign up for, I talked about that bravery, that initial bravery when people sign up for a class.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes people get to that point and then they're like, okay, now I can't possibly do this. Right.
Sure.
So they say things like, oh, I'm not an artist, or I've never danced before, or I won't be able to do this. They tell them that themselves that, even though they're there.
Yeah.
And so those two things are already in, you know, direct conflict with each other. So I invite folks in as that beginner, you know, from that beginner framework that like, We all learn at a different pace. There's no judgment here. You are just here to explore something new and maybe surprise yourself in the process. And so I start by talking about that growth mindset for belly dance, that like everybody learns at a different pace. Everyone has a different body, but all bodies are welcome in this space and all bodies should feel safe in this space. Mm-hmm. And we talk a little bit about the history and the cultural origins. And then we really get into like, here's what's underneath. Here's the foundation of what's underneath these movements. Mm-hmm. It's not about...
Meaning like down to the muscles,
to the muscles. It's not about what you see in the mirror, but what you feel interiorly. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of a metaphor for artistic expression in general.
Absolutely.
Right? It's about how you feel it inside and how it makes you connect to your own identity. I don't know if I answered that.
You totally did. I think it's wonderful.
Okay.
So I guess even in that, thinking about beginners coming to belly dance, how did you come to belly dance?
Yeah. Okay. Let me think about how to frame this. So let's start with the body image. Right. So, mm-hmm. When I was in seventh grade, this is when I started to see a real disparity in like the symmetry of my body, mm-hmm. as a female. I kind of chalked it up to puberty and all that kind of stuff, but it really became more and more pronounced as I got older. Mm-hmm. And that's where I internalized it and sort of, you know, I was feeling like I felt beautiful. Mm-hmm. Like however I determined that definition, but it didn't look the way that, you know, American society, Western American civilization society had determined what beautiful was. And I know a lot of people can relate to that. And so there was this fight that I had mentally and emotionally and physically with all of this going on. And my mom was such an incredible... I'm going to try not to cry. Was such an incredible and supportive force that, you know, she always told me from when I was five to when she passed away that I was beautiful, right? Because she saw a different beauty and helped me really feel that, and then helped me like, you know, hide myself in ways that were socially acceptable, right? Mm-hmm. So I had a breast disparity, and this is what my TEDx talk is about.
but so as a form of protection, maybe like in those public spaces.
Yes. Yeah. So she sewed these sort of mastectomy pads into my bras and my swimsuits and like all this. And then, you know, at every opportunity would just tell me how amazing I was and how beautiful mm-hmm. I was. And, I hope it didn't go to my head, you know, like, oh, I'm so amazing. But, and then I actually ended up having surgery when I was a junior. In high school. Mm-hmm. And then that brought up a whole new set of like, okay, no, well now I've succumbed to these standards that I don't agree with. Mm-hmm. And I also have plastic inside my body and like, mm-hmm. you know, like all just, it just was surprising in that way. And then she said, you know, I was a belly dancer when I was like in the 60s and 70s. And I was like, oh, what? And she's like, I see that there's a belly dance class at the Octagon Center for the Arts. Mm-hmm. I think you might really like it. Do you want to sign up for it? And I was like, yeah, sure. Why not? Let's just jump in.
Be vulnerable. Be scared.
Try something. You know, my mom did it. Like, I want to connect to her in that way. And I want to connect to, you know, I have some Middle Eastern ancestry. I was like, wow, this is a really cool way to connect to those two things. And I took the class and it was like automatically I felt so different in my body. Sure. I felt so more connected to my body and I felt like my body could do these beautiful, powerful things. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't about that my body was physically beautiful, but that it could do beauty.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It could like, beauty was a verb.
Yeah. It can create the beauty.
Yes. 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 Yeah. And I think of art as that way too, right? I don't think of like, you know, you're an artist because it's you develop these skills and these abilities through experience and through exploration over time.
Yeah.
And art, like my body is a vessel through which art happens. So like art is also a verb. I art, I art and I dance. And then I'm kind of going off the rails here, but that's how I got into belly dance. And I stuck with it. The instructor asked me after that first class, if I wanted to join her troupe. And I've been in that troupe ever since.
Wow. Since you were 16? Is that when you said?
I was 18.
Okay.
Or I'm sorry, I was 17. So I was 17 when I had surgery. I took the class after that surgery. Mm-hmm. And have, you know.
And
been
ever
there.
Since. Yeah. Been in that troupe. What a wonderful, yeah. Especially like the longevity with something I think is significant. And that does change how we create in those spaces and the things that you're able to do with your body, as just as you're saying, like the skills that you're building throughout that time and that commitment. Yes. And I do think it's beautiful. Anytime I've seen you perform with your troupe or at other events, like it radiates a message of body positivity, right? And really, what I have learned from someone named Sonia Renee Taylor, what she describes is radical self-love. Right. And I think that's a yes. really beautiful way to express that in through creative practice. And so I wanted to share this quote by Sonia Renee Taylor, just describing what radical self-love means. And so she writes, "Radical self-love summons us to be our most expansive selves, knowing that the more unflinchingly powerful we allow ourselves to be, the more unflinchingly powerful others feel capable of being. Our unapologetic embrace of our bodies gives others permission to unapologetically embrace theirs." And for me, that quote resonated so much with what I see in you and the work that you do, especially because there's such an important component of education in there too, right? Yeah. And yes. and mutuality in education. Well, so.
No, that's awesome. I really appreciate that. And I, you know, one of the really interesting things is that I never showed my belly when I was dancing as a young person, mm-hmm. When I was young and fit, you know?
Yeah.
and now that I'm a bit older and I've got stuff going on, mm-hmm. I'm like, you know, it is important for me to show people, to show my belly. It's important for me to feel free in that way. And to model that for others as well.
Yeah.
And I love that. I'm going to look her up.
Yeah, definitely look her up. So if people are interested in joining your class, starting beginning belly dance, where could they get more information?
Yeah, so you can find more information about my troupe, Mirage Dance mm-hmm. Troupe, at www.miragedancetroupe.com. That's probably where they're the most active, or on Facebook at the same. But we also meet at the Ames Public Library on the second and fourth Saturdays of each month from like 10:30 to 12:30. And
shout out to the Ames Public Library.
Right? Oh, yeah. No, it's just amazing. Yeah. Stop in. We're very casual. You can yeah. come in and watch. You can come in and ask questions. But I'm also teaching a belly dance class at Roosevelt Park through Ames Parks and Rec starting in May. So I don't know that it's available for registration yet, but it will be. And that I'm really excited about that because I actually 2020 really taught me I love teaching outdoors.
Yes, that was a nice way to do it. And Roosevelt Park is also one of my favorites. Do you do it under the?
Yeah, under the, yeah.
Mm-hmm. I don't know what you call that.
Under
like
the
a canopy,
the
maybe perhaps.
Gazebo.
The gazebo.
Yeah.
So you've talked about your dance troupe a couple of times. So Mirage Dance Troupe, and it's described as a fusion dance troupe. Can you explain what that means?
Yes. So, This we could also talk about this for days. The history and origins of what we call belly dance have really widespread, but also specific origins, I guess. So a lot of the movements that we think of as belly dance that were actually termed belly dance by Europeans come from folk dances or social dances or other dances performed traditionally in Southwest Asia, the Middle East, Northern Africa, places like Turkey and Greece, and then spread throughout the world through various means, some nefarious and some not, right? Mm-hmm. And so it gets a little muddy when you're trying to determine what type of dance you are. Mirage Dance Troupe, our official name is Mirage Middle Eastern Dance Troupe, because the dances that we originally performed and learned were rooted in Egyptian, mostly Egyptian and Turkish style dance. But throughout the decades, we've become more connected to other global dancers around the world. And so there's been more of an effort to push, instead of just calling it belly dance, really giving that dance that dance form and the dance forms that are combined, they're a different title. So that's where we fuse movements from these different traditions. We add modern dance elements. We add Americanized or Westernized dance to them, or some folks do. Mm-hmm. And so the term I think that we're using right now is transnational fusion dance. Okay. So we bridge different traditions across different ethnicities, but we really try to stay, we try to dance in celebration as opposed to appropriation. So
yeah.
So having having a mindful practice of that is also really important as we continue to move forward and adapt and change the way that we dance and the way that we teach.
Yeah. So maybe just to expand on that a little bit and addressing cultural appreciation versus cultural appropriation, how do you do that within the troupe? Do you have regular conversations about that idea and those because they can be really harmful concepts, right? And
yes.
So how do you avoid doing harm while celebrating this
yes.
form
and,
of dance?
And while also having that balance where you're welcoming people in and not trying to turn them away by being scared that they're going to make a mistake or
absolutely
or that sort of thing. So we really stress, we've actually, our troupe has shifted. We had several folks that moved out of state mm-hmm. actually during 2020. And so now, we brought new folks in from this last session of dance classes, and everyone's really excited and enthusiastic. And we're starting to have those conversations a little bit at a time because we brought those folks in January and people are busy and we're not really performing. And so they're sort of trickling in, and sometimes people come and sometimes people don't. And so we try to address that in some way, at least from the very beginning. When people come in, we're like, look,
yeah.
We need to be careful.
Yeah.
We need to be careful with our music choices. If we're working with music that is Arabic or that is Turkish or has, it's a different language, we need to know what the lyrics are and what they mean.
Mm-hmm.
And there are certain, messages to avoid when we're dancing. We also, Mirage takes this approach that like we don't twerk, and not that there's anything wrong with twerking. Twerking is also rooted in beautiful Afro-American dance styles, but that is not us.
Mm-hmm.
There is a connotation, especially in America, that is a sexualized version of dance. And we, while belly dance in our, in our perception as a troupe is very sensual, it's very body-centered and it's very sinuous and serpentine. There's a lot of S's in there. we're not strippers. We are not sexualizing ourselves. We do not invite people into our bodies. We have body autonomy. We want to express that as well.
Mm-hmm.
And so the more we go and the more we get folks involved in the troupe for performance, the more we will have those deeper conversations about surrounding different traditions and giving folks a sense of that history.
Yeah. That's good. And I think being thoughtful, right? Like knowing what you're doing and why you're doing it. And that's all that you're describing, right? Is an important part of that.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
So you've given a little bit of information with your dance troupe website as well as the YouTube, but are there places people can go if they want to follow you and keep up with all of the things that you're doing?
Yeah, sure. So this is an area of growth, of opportunity for me where I'm not super great at promoting myself or being active, but I'm the most active on Instagram, and my handle is Paper Crane Sarah. So, with no H.
Okay. No H.
Paper Crane Sarah. That's where I'm most likely to share what classes I have coming up, what I'm working on, whether it's mostly like small art or works in progress and weird and random dance videos, sometimes cats and other things. So that's probably the best place to find me, other than talk to me in the world.
I know, right? That's always my favorite as well.
Yes.
But so as we come to a close, I want to ask one more question. And when lost in the freedom of dreaming, are there things that you creatively dream about?
Yes.
Yeah.
So my dream job and my dream for this community, I would love to open up and operate a school for the expressive arts. I think there's a lot of really powerful art happening in this community.
Absolutely.
And I feel like I hardly, even though I'm kind of in the community, I feel like I don't even know what's happening until after it's done.
Yeah.
And so I would love for there to be an alternative high school, which there's a community academy, which mm-hmm. I'm super excited about, but you know, kind of bridging those things. And that's what I'd love to do. I want to run a school for the expressive arts. And
well, I will be the first to apply when you open it up. I will submit my application for sure.
Cool.
So, thank you so much, Sarah, for your time and sharing all of this with us. I'm always so grateful to be in the same space with you and to learn from you. And so I really appreciate you.
Thank you, Nancy. I really appreciate you too. That admiration is totally reciprocal.
Thank you. So thank you for listening to Articulations, brought to you by the Margaret Sloss Center for Women and Gender Equity, the College of Design, and KHOI Community Radio 89.1 FM, with support from Humanities Iowa. Our interview is edited by Rosie Rowe. To round out the hour, we invite you to sit back and enjoy a selection of songs picked by Sarah. You can find the full Articulations playlist on the Sloss Center website. Don't forget to tune in next week, Monday at 4 p.m., for an Articulations conversation with Helen Barton.